Hey, yo.
Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
It's Pastoral Down.
You straight punk bitch!
I mean, you're just gonna replace me.
Shut up!
Brenda Morales,
the biggest slut in the Western Hemisphere!
Why do I have to have a buzzer?
And Greg DeMarco.
You are now and will forever be an asshole.
Because it's my show.
And I love you, Greg.
You guys know how to party.
You're welcome.
What is up? It is a beautiful Tuesday evening as we record this program. Tuesday, April 16th, 2024, for historical purposes. A nice warm 84 degrees here in Phoenix, Arizona. My name is Greg DeMarco. This is the Greg DeMarco Show. I am at GregDeMarco44 on all of your forms of social media. The website is at ChairShot Media for all things sports, sports entertainment. It's thechairshot.com.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Patrick O'Dowd, the wrestling realist, at wrestling realist, WrestlingRealist, is not here. It's his fault. We didn't have a show last week. I only say it's his fault because he's not here to defend himself, although he was sick. I was literally trying to record a podcast last week and just ended up talking to a friend of mine for 2 hours. So no apologies there. If you want to know who, just go back and listen to the show opening. But this week, Patrick O'Dowd on vacation, enjoying the world of Disney, a much needed vacation for Patrick O'Dowd. And I will never, never disrespect anybody for going on vacation. But I sent out the call and the call was answered by someone who you'd be surprised to hear. And if you listen to the Mindless Wrestling podcast, you know some of this, but he and I actually have some of the same viewpoints on wrestling. And it's because we tend to get our information from the same places. And even though I spout out numbers and I love numbers, my use of numbers, knowledge of numbers and manipulation of numbers pales in comparison to who I have brought for you on the show today. So he is part of the Mindless Wrestling podcast. He is our numbers guru. Whenever I bring up stats and figures, I always refer to this guy because he knows it better than anybody. Search for him on your social media at Rob the Genius. It is our friend Rob the Genius. Rob, thank you for filling in the rather small, I think he's got small feet, shoes of the wrestling realist Patrick O'Dowd.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. And I have like huge feet. So, I mean, so.
I do too. For a dude who's 5'8", I wear like size 12 shoes. So I got clown feet compared to my height. So, yeah.
Oh yeah. I got aircraft carriers, man. Like 13 or 14, depending on the shoe. See? Yeah,
exactly. But how tall are you?
6'1".
See, I'm 5'8". I wear 12s. So, but that's all the men in my family have big, stupid ass feet. So yeah, it is what it is. Big nose, big feet. Thanks, Dad. But it's all good. But we are here talking about wrestling, and you know, Rob has been gracious enough to join us this week, which I'm excited about. As most of you know, I'm in Arizona, so I'm on Pacific time. He's on East Coast time. So whenever we're able to make time zones work for everybody, it always makes me a very, very happy person. But here's the thing, right? Rob is the numbers guy. I love talking about numbers. So if you're not a numbers person, here's what I would say if you're not a numbers person. Listen anyway, because maybe it'll change your perspective and you'll see the value in some of the numbers. Maybe you'll kind of pick and choose what numbers work best for you, because if you've listened to different shows and different podcasts, and I like to listen to non-wrestling content too to keep myself grounded, although this next example is not exactly grounding, but if you ever listen to the Pat McAfee show, they always bring up stats and figures, And he has a great quote where he always says, and this is more geared towards NFL, but stats play for both teams. You can manipulate stats. You can use stats in any way that you want to really give any argument. Like, Rob, I could pull up a year's worth of data right now and tell you why WWE's numbers are terrible and AEW's numbers are great. I could also use the same exact numbers to tell you why AEW's numbers are terrible and WWE's numbers are great. You know better than anybody. You can use numbers to tell any story you want.
Yes, and so it is very important. What I do is I try to look at as many different things as possible from many different angles. And I try to take a scientist perspective, and that is, A, you admit that you don't know something when you don't know, and B, you know, it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to have an idea and look it up and then reach the conclusion that your idea was wrong. I mean, that happens to me a lot. I get a little notion. I get a little theory. Uh-huh. I look into it some more. And it turns out, you know what? Wasn't right. And then you just say, okay, hey, what? That's, you know, science is basically is you're wrong a bunch of times until you get it right.
Which is really life in general, if you think about it. Like, life's all about trial and error. Like, you know, fail 100 times and get up 101. Like, that's just what life is all about. But yet people online, I feel like the number one reason people will use numbers, stats, figures, anything on Twitter is just to be right. Like, everyone just wants to be right and prove themselves right and prove the other person wrong. And they'll use numbers in any way possible. And I've said it before, and I've said it when people try to argue with me on social media. Patrick and I have said it on this show. I'm so happy sometimes when I'm wrong, because then it's fun. And then I enjoy what I've learned in that situation and what's come up. So I love being wrong.
Same here. And because it opens the door to just.
Yeah.
Because you eventually want to find the answer if it's there. And it just being wrong opens the door to explore new things, to explore new directions, go with new angles to try and find out what the correct answer is.
100%. Yeah, I'm with you 100%. Like I said, I love being wrong, and I'll happily be wrong all the time. It's going to sound weird to those of you who are listening, but we just kind of did a little stop there to look at some technical issues. So, but the science that Rob was talking about and the art of being wrong, like, I love being wrong. And I think that's the point of the numbers, but everybody online wants to use those numbers to be right. And I think I probably fell into that trap years ago as well. And we all grow and mature and get better about things. But nowadays, Rob, like, I think being wrong is more fun. As crazy as some people are going to hear that notion and think we're absolutely batshit crazy for wanting to be wrong.
Oh, well, no, because when I went to college with all my friends were mathematicians and scientists, and we would, you know, we would study together. And so we would get into just, you know, and everybody thought they were right all the time. And we would get into some real heated discussions and heated debates over what was the right way to do this and that and the other. And so, you know, I got used to it, you know, because if you're going to jump in the fire like that, guess what? You're going to lose sometimes.
Right.
You're going to be wrong sometimes. And, you know, I got used to it. And it just if it happens, you know what? You got to go back and come up with something better next time. And, you know, and also my dad was a very blunt man, and he would look you dead in the face and tell you he thought you're full of shit. Okay. And so you had to recover from that, and you had to be able to pass his, you know, personal smell test when you were talking to him about something. So, you know,
it's so funny too. Like, what did your dad think of pro wrestling then, if you had to pass a smell test? Like, how did he feel about the wrestling business?
Oh man, this was so funny, because the first time he saw me watching it, he said just point blank, you know, it's fake, right? But I was fascinated with just the art form and how they would go about making this stuff look like a real fight. So I kept watching it.
Right.
And then one day Bruno Sammartino was on commentary with Vince McMahon, and he stopped. And then that's when he let me know that at one time he was a wrestling fan and he used to go see Bruno Sammartino.
Mm-hmm.
So when he saw Bruno on commentary, he would sit down and watch it with me. And then he eventually started taking me to some house shows, and we saw Hulk Hogan. And the first one we went to was Hulk Hogan versus Terry Funk. And so, you know, he would watch it with me sometimes. He would take me to these shows. And, you know, and then so we found a way to enjoy it together. And then, you know, and then I took a few breaks along the way during the years. And I jumped back in around 2012, and I've been back at it ever since. And at this point, you know, I'm pretty much, you know, I may not, even if I kind of, you know, lose interest in whatever is current at the time, I'm never going to stop watching altogether anymore. So I'm here for the duration, one way or another.
I think at this point it would be hard to stop watching altogether. Like, I really do think that would be difficult.
Like, I may even look, there may come a day where I just decide to watch stuff from the 2010s or the, you know, whatever, or,
right,
you know, or from the 80s and not mess with, like, I'm with rap music now. I don't listen to current rap music. I listen to the stuff from when I was in college, basically the 1980s and 90s. I stick to that. I got it in my little, you know, music library. That's what I stick to. And, you know, I may be that way when we're wrestling. I may just stick to certain things and not do whatever the new stuff is at the time. But I don't think I'm ever going to just flat out quit again.
And I think it's okay. I really do. Like, I think there's nothing wrong with that. Oh, yeah. Like, that's what generations are all about. And that's why generations always argue about theirs being the best. That's the Jordan versus LeBron argument and so many other sports arguments too. But here's what I want to ask you about numbers, and I want to present this to our audience because everybody uses numbers in some form, even if they don't think they do. So the discussion that I want to have is kind of making the numbers real, and human is not the best way to put it, but human is what I'll use. There's millions of numbers out there. There's a million numbers about wrestling. Which ones are actually important? When you're talking about wrestling, which numbers actually matter? This is really an opinion-based, and I have my ideas as well, but what numbers are actually important when you're looking at pro wrestling?
Okay, ultimately, the number that matters more than anything else are the ticket sales.
Yeah.
Because that is your true indicator of how your company is doing. Because, and WWE, then they're kind of a lagging indicator, which means they're the last, the warning signs come through like TV ratings or whatever. But then, like, when the storm hits or when the storm is over, you see it in ticket sales. So when, right, you know, you might see some rumblings, like the TV ratings may go down for, you know, they might start going down, but then you don't see an effect with ticket sales yet. But then when the effect of whatever made your TV ratings go down, it may take a couple of months to affect your ticket sales. But then when it hits, that stuff will crater on you. And that's your real measure of how your company is doing. People, you know, whether or not you're selling tickets. TV ratings matter. But again, nowadays in the day of, you know, they got guaranteed TV deals. So if WWE's ratings go into crapper next week,
right,
you know, they got guaranteed money for the next few years, right? So, but if their ticket sales go down, then that's how you know that stuff's not resonating or what have you. And honestly, we just saw this a couple of years ago. Like 2019 was just a shit year.
Right.
That because, and the effect, well, it started going south the year before, mm-hmm, but 2019 is when it hit. And you saw, like, they had sections tarped off on Raw and SmackDown. Oh, you could hear the echoes in the building some nights on Raw. In 2019, it was bad. And that was your sign that things were not going well. But now you see how it is now. They got a sellout streak for TV going on.
And even though, like, I think Montreal didn't sell out, but still it was, 14,000 people? Like, it was huge.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, was, I mean, it's... I mean,
in 2019, they were down to like 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, you know, and for them, that's not good.
And that's so funny too, because nowadays you think about 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, and you compare that to what AEW's drawing, and people want to, you know, shit all over the money that AEW draws or the tickets that AEW sells. And I have to remind myself, they've only been around for 5 years, but they got TV, they got whatever. But like, maybe I just don't remember, but to the credit or to the defense of the AEW, the actual true AEW fans, not the ones that just want to shit all over WWE. It still looks fine on television when I'm watching it on television, when I do, because I don't watch AEW weekly. And B, like, it's I don't think it's as bad as people say it is. It's never gonna be WWE, and once they get that out of their brain, they'll be better off for it. But like, it's WWE went through it as well with the houses and with what they drew and everything. It's just part of the business. The business is cyclical, you know. We talked about indie wrestling, and you know, the indie that I run out here in Arizona sells out every single show. Last August, we didn't have a good house. Like, it just happened. And I looked at different factors and what we did differently for that one and how it fell within our calendar, all sorts of things. But and you know, vowed not to make those mistakes again. But it does happen. Even the most successful companies are going to have some of those down experiences. I don't think it's as negative as people say it is towards AEW, but with WWE, it's obviously a huge, huge factor right now. It's interesting that you said the very first thing you talked about were ticket sales. And here's why I say it's interesting, because to me, I think that the TV money is the most important number, right? What's someone willing to spend?
Let me just say this. The revenue, the biggest revenue is the TV money.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I like the fact that you ticket sales, because what you did, and this is as a mathematician, this doesn't surprise me. This shows that you're more than just crunching the numbers. You're actually doing something with it. You took that number, right, the TV number, and you said, okay, what does that do for you? And it's the TV is so good. That's subjective, right? But the TV, the objective part of the TV, it's so good that it is driving ticket sales and it is driving people into the building to see the roadshow aspect. Like, I look at it like a roadshow, right? Like, when I was a kid, the Harlem Globetrotters would be on TV a couple times a year, and then they would be going around and you'd buy tickets and you'd go. I probably saw the Harlem Globetrotters a handful of times as I was a kid. That's what WWE, how it's the circus, right? The circus used to have TV specials, and then you would go around and you'd buy tickets to the circus, and it was a traveling roadshow. And that's what that is to me and to a lot of others. I am a big fan of what they're doing, and it does translate to the houses, and it does translate to what people see, you know, what they want to do and what it makes them want to do. And I think that's, you know, that's where everybody likes to say people watch WWE out of habit. And I think people watch AEW out of habit, and those 700,000 to 800,000 are the ones that are watching it out of habit. I don't think people are watching WWE out of habit, because then they're in turn going to the buildings. Even their house shows are selling well. So it proves what you're saying. And that's why I love how you went straight to house show. Cause I never would have thought of that. Cause it shows that the strength of the product.
Year. There's one, they run in Northern Virginia every year.
Right.
And it's usually about maybe 2,000 people. Last year I went and it was like 5,000 people to build.
Yeah. See,
well, yeah, I mean, that's a visible difference. So it's – well, and there are two things, right? So the overall quality of show, but also you got to have some individual names that draw – and in AEW, there is a dividing line literally when Punk got fired.
Like, I bet.
There's a literal dividing line with, you know – with crowd sizes and TV ratings. And Punk very much was a driving force behind their TV audiences and selling tickets and selling merchandise. And so losing him was a major, just bad thing, which is why I've argued with some people in some places that they should have kept him. They should have fired Jungle Boy. Okay. And looking in on WWE side. Okay. So there are, they're about maybe five people who can find some kind of verified reports who just announcing them for the show sells tickets.
Yeah.
And that's Roman, Cody, Rock, obviously, John Cena, obviously, and Punk when he came back. And then when Brock was there, he was another one where just announcing him for a show would move some tickets. And so now, look, if you look at WWE, look, they got all those guys. Look, I mean, not, The Rock is back now, right? So Roman was already doing it. Cody, when he came back, started doing it. Punk was just, you know, Punk started doing it when he came back. And then they got the, you know, Cena, whenever he would show up, would do it. And now you got The Rock back in 2024. So you got five people there who just announcing them for the show moves tickets.
Right? Absolutely.
That's huge. Okay. You know, that is just a huge thing, because a lot of times when the audience starts to dip, it's not even about something, well, quality of the show was part of it, but also like when, you know, when Austin and Rock stopped being full time, right? The audience went down because why? Because some people were done once they were done. When Cena went part time, some people were done because Cena was the guy they grew up with. You know, I'm a little bit older when Hogan, you know, went part time, whatever you want to call it, back in 1992. You know, there were people who grew up with Hulk Hogan, and if he wasn't going to be there, then, you know, I'm done. Or, and, you know, I was a WCW guy mainly back in the 80s. And when Ric Flair jumped from WCW to the WWF, that almost killed the territory, okay? Because a lot of us were done when that happened, you know, and for, you know, for the time being, or at least we felt that way, right? I mean, so it's overall quality of show, and it's having some people who just on their name can sell tickets, right? I mean, those are your two driving factors, really. And you can see it, you know, because I've been looking at TV ratings, and I subscribe to WrestleNomics. If you're really interested in this stuff, I recommend doing that. They have just tons and tons of information. And they do track things like how ticket sales are going quarter and whatnot. And with AEW, it's funny because back in 2022, as far as crowd size, they were right there with WWE on average. Like WWE was averaging around like 6,000 people when you factor in everything from pay-per-views to TV to house shows. They were averaging around 6,000. And AEW was averaging about 5,000. That was about 2 years ago, 2022. And then AEW got stagnant and WWE took off. And, you know, and that's kind of how explains kind of the gap in between. And then, you know, losing Punk last year was a big hit.
How big of a hit, and you may not remember this, and that's okay. How big of a hit was losing Cody for AEW? Because right around that time frame when they seemed to split, 2022,
yeah.
I mean, that's Cody.
Like, it wasn't a quick, like, the Punk thing was very quick and very dramatic. So it wasn't like that. But there was, I mean, there's definitely some erosion. And then also, Triple H got, like, in August of 2022, Triple H got pretty much a honeymoon boost.
Right. That month.
Because like even like Raw was doing over 2 million viewers for that whole month. And they don't do that normally. And they did it for that whole first month that Triple H was in charge. So basically it was like a honeymoon boost. And then, you know, then it settled back down. But so, yeah, Cody can definitely hurt. I mean, but it wasn't as quick and as dramatic as when Punk left. Because Punk really was driving things. I don't think they haven't hit a million viewers since he left.
They haven't hit a million viewers. I only know this because I was there. Their show in their event in Phoenix, Dynamite in Phoenix in 2023, was the last Dynamite to hit a million viewers. That was in February of 2023.
Yep, February 22nd. Yep.
I was there. And honestly, like, that was my first ever Dynamite experience. I had a great time. And, you know, freaking Evil Uno was the most over person on the show. And people were chanting Evil Uno.
I went to a couple of Dynamites. Yeah. I mean, I had a fun time, and like the Acclaim was at that point. Uh-huh. The Acclaim was like, they were selling, like, they had like John Cena levels of merchandise coverage in their building that night. I mean, scissor fingers and t-shirts and everything. But yeah, man, they've been it's just been a steady, well, because first, you know, Punk was still there, but he was injured and he wasn't there as much. And then things started to slip. And then, you know, when he got fired, then like the houses dropped off almost immediately. And then, you know, the TV, yeah, I mean, they've gone from averaging in the 900s to averaging in the 800s. And now at this point this year, they're averaging more in the 700s. Mm-hmm. They have some individual things that are just a drag right now. The Young Bucks are a drag.
I agree. Like, it's personal preference, a personal opinion, but I don't enjoy what they're doing.
No, with the Young Bucks. It shows in the, I mean, their drag. Chris Jericho, at one time, Chris Jericho was somebody who boosted numbers. Now he's not anymore. And again, like Punk's not there anymore. Cody's not there anymore. So those two things, like, so they just have, and then Tony's booking, like, because he books people, like, cause I do watch Dynamite sometimes, and then, like, there are people on there who've just been losing for years and years, and he's booking them in matches on Dynamite, for, and they're going, like, 10, 15 minutes sometimes. And, like, I'm sorry, people are not going to watch, people are not going to spend 10, 15 minutes watching somebody who loses all the time.
Yeah, oh, I agree.
You've already told him that person stinks, basically. I mean, you've already... if... Like, WWE wouldn't... They wouldn't put on a 15-minute match with Tozawa against somebody. They would not put them on and have them go 15 minutes. Now, it might be a great match in terms of ring work or whatever, but we've seen Tozawa lose for years.
Right. Yeah, unless he's in a tag match, yeah, it's, you know, they need to eat up some time, especially on Raw. But, yeah, they're not going to portray him in that way that is supposed to be, you know, this fundamental great wrestler who's going to be a threat for anything. He's not. And Dynamite, to me, it's weird because Tony Khan, everybody talks about change the booking. He's a matchmaker. That's what he is. And that's what, and I get caught up in this and no one agrees with me. I swear to God, whenever I bring it up, no one agrees with me. And I think it's just because people have too hard of a time getting out of the mode of what they think professional wrestling is. AEW, to me, is ripping off the wrong product by ripping off WWE. Because watch AEW right now. It is a WWE clone. Over the past 6 months, their production has become more and more like WWE. You have, from the hard cam, stage is on the left. Announcers are now on the right. They used to be on the stage. Now they're on the right. They have video boards that go behind the ring. Who's been doing that for years? WWE. They have two video board ring aprons. WWE. Like, it's literally, and I think people just think that's what pro wrestling is. And if Tony Khan asked me for advice, God, he never would. But if he did, or people always ask me all the time, how would you fix AEW? How would you fix AEW? They all want me to say the booking. And I always go into the presentation and they hate me for it. I would say, go to the next three UFC pay-per-views and rip off their presentation because they are matchmaking and putting on fights. I do think there's a place for that in pro wrestling. And fans that would get into that and watch that, but you're kind of sports entertainment. You're trying to prove you can do sports entertainment better, and you're not. And it's like just become. They're not really the alternative they think they are. But if they ripped off, say, a UFC presentation, they could actually become a true alternative and something different. But right now, if I'm flipping the channels and I see AEW and I see the camera angle, the stage, the commentary, whatever, I'm like, oh, well, this is like fake WWE. Why would I watch this? But if it looked more like true fighting, true sport or whatever, I do think they could make up some ground and get some more traction. I'm not saying they would get to WWE levels, but I do think they could be doing better than they are now and actually be an alternative.
Yeah, because, so now they have their presentation is more sports entertainment-ish, but their booking style is still more matchmaking.
Right.
Like for example, tomorrow night, they're advertising Claudio versus Will Ospreay.
That's a match.
That's going to be fantastic, I'm sure.
Right. It's going to mean nothing, but it's going to be we already know who's going to win. There's no doubt in anybody's mind that Will Ospreay is going to win that match. It's going to be a fantastic match because they're both great workers. I really enjoy Will Ospreay. I wanted him to go to WWE because I wanted to see what he would do being produced and presented by WWE. And I think he will end up there some way. I don't think his recent comments are going to, I mean, Cody fucking took a sledgehammer to the Triple H throne. Like, come on. And then Triple H just anointed the guy and he's probably going to be Triple H 10 years from now. Cody is. So, yeah, so what Will Ospreay did is not going to come. Triple H probably secretly respects it. He might not respect it because it came from Tony Khan, but if it really came from Will Ospreay, I think Triple H would actually respect that. But it's going to be a great match, but it means nothing. It really means nothing. That's why I love Swerve Strickland so much because he's someone who took things that mean nothing and actually built something out of it. So good for him. Now, yeah, a rap song and a dance helped him take off, but that's wrestling. you just never know what's going to work. But yeah. The rap song and the dance got people to tune into him. Exactly. What he was doing in the ring and his ability to tell a story inside the ring and the great feud with Hangman Page, even if you didn't like some of it, the drinking blood or whatever bullshit that I didn't really like. Overall, the feud for me gets a grade of an A because of what it did to Swerve. And people would be shocked if he doesn't win the title at Dynasty. I don't think he should win the title at Dynasty. I think he should win it at Double or Nothing. I've been pounding the table that Double or Nothing as a name should mean something more title matches. Like, I thought the Iron Man match with Danielson and MJF should happen at Double or Nothing after their match at Revolution. But what do I know?
Another thing. He needs to designate a pay-per-view as his WrestleMania.
I agree. And you would think it would be All In, and maybe that's how they look at it now, but that's it's just when your pay-per-views always emanate from the same place too, like that's kind of a struggle. Yeah. But the more and more they creep towards monthly pay-per-views, they got to do it. Double or Nothing to me seems like the one because that was the first one that they did under their banner and everything. All In's really kind of hard because it's a week after All Out. Like it's just a weird calendar ring. I actually liked All In because it gave some other people some opportunities to shine. But at the same time, it's like, why would you do that? Why would you? But that's the AEW fan base. Like, and you know this, even if the numbers are down for All In, they got the diehards who are still going to pay and it's still going to be profitable. So
yeah,
it's not as profitable, but it's still profitable versus running nothing. So I get it and I hate it all at the same time. Like I just because I don't like it doesn't mean it's 100% of a bad decision.
Yeah, I mean, so, but I think he needs to pick a what his WrestleMania is going to be, and also that gives you, you know, then now you can use that as a central point for your booking for the year, like WWE yeah. does, right? You book towards WrestleMania, right? So then, okay, so we're going to book towards Double or Nothing. We're going to book towards All, and whichever one is going to be, pick one. Right. And then so you can center your whole year booking towards that big show. That's something I think he needs to do. Now that they're going to 9 or 10 pay-per-views a year, he needs to, and they are finally getting on Fight TV here in the U.S. finally.
Yep.
But they need to bring the price down if you're going to 10 pay-per-views a year. You can't. I mean,
yes and no. I think right now they don't, because until they grow the viewership and the ticket sales, I think the people are buying the pay-per-views anyway, so you might as well get the money out of them. If you're in a position to actually grow your pay-per-view base, then yeah. But pay-per-view is also a dying medium at the level that WWE, yeah. I don't know, because look at what UFC does with it. I mean, UFC still does it like crazy, and they have their subscription service. So Dana White thought Vince McMahon was crazy for putting pay-per-views on the network for essentially for free. So it's just a different model, but yeah, I don't.
I guess I'm thinking like people like me who are curious.
Right.
I'm not paying $50.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
But I would pay 20. I would pay 30.
I just don't think there's enough of us right now to make that.
That's probably what it is.
But I do think
their B-level pay-per-views are cheaper.
Yeah.
I finally got the Impact Plus thing.
Oh yeah.
But for a while, I would get the B pay-per-views, and they're on Friday nights. I would get the B pay-per-views. They would be $20. And, you know, you could even watch it the next day if SmackDown was too good to skip that night, and you could just watch it the next day or whatever.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I think you're right. They're not to the point where there aren't enough people like me. There are not enough people like me just yet to do that. I would jump on somebody because look, I love Samoa Joe. I love this running he's been on, and I would have bought. And then the Sting retirement show, I would have definitely bought that for $30.
Yeah.
Now, look, I'm an old WCW fan.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I wanted to see Sting's last match, but not for $50.
I went back and rewatched Clash 1 on the way to Sting's retirement. Sting, the match where Sting and Darby won the tag titles was also here in Phoenix. It was my second ever AEW event that I went to. And it was weird because my first AEW Dynamite, I enjoyed the whole thing. When it got into Rampage, not nearly as much. Back then they had Dark and the Dark the Dark matches were great because they were all of our local talent here in Arizona. So that was fun to see. But then, you know, the Rampage matches. And the Young Bucks weren't on TV until Rampage last year when they were in Phoenix. So it's like, all right, that's, you know, they did. Dynamite was literally all stuff that I enjoyed. And then Rampage was just kind of there. And I left before the last match to beat the traffic out. And I did it again this year, too, when I went. But it was, you know, it was enjoyable from that perspective. I will say one thing about AEW, and everybody talks about marketing, marketing, marketing. Last year, last February 2023, AEW comes to Phoenix. On all their ads that they, you know, they were putting out there for months and months and months, front and center was Sting. By time they got here, February 22nd, 2023, there was no Sting to be found. He was not on the card. He was not anywhere. The giant banner hanging out in front of the building still had Sting's face on it and no Sting. I saw so many NWO Stings in the crowd, and we always joke locally whenever anybody's dressed up as Sting, they're dressed up, you know, their NWO Sting. There were tons of Sting fans here, really great Sting cosplays, like all that. That was also a huge, that was like almost 9,000 fans of Dynamite that was here last year. And this year was still like five or six. Like, it was one of their best attended Dynamites of the year. Easily top five. You know, I know Boston had more, but definitely one of their best attended Dynamites even here this year. This year, the local advertising and the giant banner, Edge, front and center. By the time they get here, no Edge, nowhere to be seen.
Okay, so you can't do that. You can't do that.
And not that they said Edge is going to be there, but his face was the one in the middle of the poster.
Yeah, so he's got to have him. He's got to be there. Come on, guys. You know?
And I just noticed that. And they just don't advertise locally. And when they do, when I do see advertisements for AEW, they're generic. Just a bunch of clips, watch wrestling, whatever. When I see advertisements for WWE, it's like, tune in as Jey Uso fights, you know, who did he fight? Finn Balor. Like, they literally advertise what's coming up that week, and they change their commercials every single week. Whereas AEW, it just feels generic. And the setup, everything about it feels generic, which isn't fair because some of the in-ring stuff actually is really good. And it doesn't get the pub and the attention it deserves because everything else feels so generic. Even their new like color scheme stage, everything, to me, it's generic. To me, it looks like a toy box that I would buy and set up when I was a kid. And that's kind of what it is, what a lot of people want to call it anyway. It's like Tony Khan's toy box and all of that, but it's just weird. So we're going to go to commercial. We come back. I got one more number question for you, and then maybe we'll even talk a little actual wrestling product. So we'll be right back on the other side. Before we do, just a quick reminder, head on over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Pick up one of those beautiful Chair Shot t-shirts. They do support everything we do here at thechairshot.com and Chair Shot Radio Network, where, you, of course, you got all your great podcasts, articles, everything. So, as I like to say, websites don't grow on trees. So, jump out there, support us, prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
All right, we are back, Greg DeMarco Show, with myself, Greg DeMarco, and Rob the Genius filling in for Patrick O'Dowd as he hangs out with the family and Mickey Mouse down at the Disney World this next little bit. So Patrick should be back on next week, but if not, we'll get more people to fill in. So I want to talk one more number with you, and then I want to shift into some actual wrestling content. And that number is one you brought up before, which is the TV ratings. I have long postulated, and maybe I'm wrong, but I've listened to people in the actual television advertising realm industry talk about this and others, so I kind of feel like it means something. Everyone loves to report the viewership, and everybody loves to report the demo. God, I hate that word so much, the demo. I hate it almost as much as I hated pivot going back to Royal Rumble. But
we can have a long conversation about that one day.
I know. but here's my thing. No one ever, whenever I read a wrestling website and I see where they post their ratings, they never post the ranking. They never post that Dynamite was number three for the night on cable. They never post that Raw was number, you know, three, four, and six, and everything else was live, you know, NCAA college basketball or NFL football and the NFL coverage. Like, to me, the ranking matters because you're being measured in real time against your actual competition, which is shows on your same night on the same medium, which for Raw is Mondays on cable, which for Dynamite is Wednesdays on cable, which for SmackDown is Fridays on network. And to me, everyone focuses on the viewership and the numbers, but almost everybody's viewership is down, because when the Attitude Era, when millions upon millions of people were watching wrestling, and because of channel flipping, the numbers were inflated. Even Eric Bischoff has admitted that.
Yes.
We didn't have 300 cable networks and 27 streaming services.
No.
And what's funny is we thought in 1999 that we had this embarrassment of riches of content that we could watch. We had no idea what was going to be coming 28 years later. So right. 25 years later. And Raw's going to Netflix. Like, the streaming has just blown up the way it has. But to me, I don't think enough value is placed on the ranking for the night. And that's just me based on my own research. But what do you think of that? If I'm wrong, tell me why I'm wrong. If I'm right, tell me why I'm right. But I feel like the ranking is not given enough focus by people.
Well, I think you are correct there. And the whole, well, and the audience number, it's one of the worst things you can do is compare it. You know, well, they used to get 8 million people in 1998. No. Okay. Now what I did once, I started comparing Monday Night Raw to Law and Order SVU, because Law and Order SVU started in 1999, which was basically the peak for Attitude Era TV numbers. So I just looked at them side by side and it's like, okay, well, is the decline about the same, or is it close to the same? And it was close enough for me to say, well, you know what? Law and Order SVU is still on TV. Law and Order SVU is in no danger of getting canceled. And you know, and so if their numbers are tracking at a similar rate as Law and Order SVU, which started back around the same time, then it's not a big deal. Now what I do is, if you want to glean some information from an audience number, then you shouldn't be comparing it to 1999. You should be comparing it to 2023.
Right.
Or you should be, because if you have a steep drop, if you have a really steep drop within the same year or within the same, you know, 12 months, that is concerning, because that's, okay, if you drop really far within 12 months, that means that's not cord cutting. That's not people having more channels or whatever. That means if you're dropping that far that fast, then that means, you know, yeah, people are finding something wrong with your product and they're checking out. And looking, WWE just happened in 2018, because like after WrestleMania 34, like, things started really to tail off. And my conclusion is that they did the worst, because they did the worst possible thing in WrestleMania 34. Like, WrestleMania 34 was a shit or get off the pot moment with Roman Reigns.
It really was.
They should have either put the belt on him, or if they weren't going to put the belt on him, they needed to move on to somebody else in the main event.
And they didn't either.
They didn't either. Right. They didn't put the belt on him, and they kept him as the main event guy on Monday Night Raw. And that, I think the numbers started just dropping, and because people just finally said, fuck this shit. I mean, some people just finally, you know, the indecision just did it for them. Right. And that, and honestly, that was a bigger hurt on anything they did than, like, as much as people were pissed off about that Seth Rollins Fiend thing, that didn't really hurt it that much. But that whole indecision with Roman Reigns in 2018 started what became like basically a pretty consistent decline for the next couple of years. And so that's what you compare yourself to. You compare yourself to the year before, or now, like in WWE right now, we're in April, like come August, you look at August, compare it to April, and then you can see whether or not, you know, what you did, how well it worked out. So like in AEW's case, now, like the past, they had like 4 or 5 weeks in the 700s. And so they've gone from averaging in the 900s to averaging in the 800s to averaging in the 700s within just like a couple of years.
Right. A year.
And
really?
So that is, even though they're still ranking high on cable, that's something you can look at. And now they have some quarter hours that are in the 600s. Mm-hmm. So that's the type of thing you look at and say, okay, that is something. That is something you can, you know, glean some information from. That is something you can reach some conclusions from. But yeah, if you're looking at, well, they used to, Raw used to get 6 million people every week in 1998, and now they only get, they get 1.8 million, right? That doesn't mean anything, okay?
Right.
That means absolutely nothing.
Not at all.
Nothing at all. I mean, it really doesn't. I mean, because you can look at Monday Night Football. Like, Monday Night Football made a big jump this year because they started, they played some games on ABC Network instead of just on ESPN.
Right, which is more of a need for ABC because of the writer's strike.
Yeah, because of the strike. Yeah, they started simulcasting on ABC. And what happened? Lo and behold, the numbers went up, right? Just being on Fox Network instead of cable for SmackDown is worth about 300,000 or 400,000 people. Just being on Fox Network.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, yeah, they're leaving Fox, but there's going to be a residual benefit that USA gets and SmackDown gets from the show having been on Fox. And Fox admitted it. Like, it wasn't because they weren't delivering the viewership. It's because advertisers don't pay as much for wrestling, which is something that we've talked about in our DM group. Like, Raw getting $500 million from Netflix Raw's getting ripped off. Like, if you really think about it, like, yeah, it's landmark for wrestling, but it's because advertisers still don't pay as much for wrestling as they do for other things with equal viewership. Especially like what the NFL, what ESPN pays NFL, what, like $1.2 billion or something like that for one season of football?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah.
And yet Raw is $500 million on Netflix. Raw is 3 hours of content, 52 weeks a year. Monday Night Football is 3 hours of content. We'll call it 3 hours. 3 hours of content, 18 weeks a year. So almost a third for more than double the amount. And people don't realize, like, yeah, these contracts that they're getting are great, but it's because that's what advertisers pay. It's the WNBA argument right now. Everybody's up in arms over Caitlin Clark's WNBA contract. Advertisers aren't paying for it. And that's who you got to blame. You got to blame the advertisers because they're the ones at the end of the day that influence the TV deals, and TV deals influence the revenue, which influences the pay. And so wrestling is still undervalued despite the record-breaking deals that they're getting and contracts that they're getting. So it's just interesting to see. And that's like AEW's, their deal's up this year, right? They're eventually going to announce a new team. They're not going away. Even if Time Warner or Warner Brothers Discovery dropped them, somebody else would pick them up. Maybe not for as much money, but they're number three almost every week. They're in the top five almost every week for cable on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
Someone wants that, okay, and someone's going to pay for it. Do I think the revenue is going to double? I absolutely don't, because wherever they go is not going to pay as much. Like, it's Warner Brothers Discovery or somebody who's going to pay less. There's no competition for AEW's content right now like there was for WWE's. Might they get an increase? Sure, but if you're Warner Brothers Discovery and you want to pay AEW the same exact rate, what's AEW really going to do?
Nothing.
They're going to take it in the end. Yeah, because they don't have an alternative. They don't have the capabilities to do their own network. And not only that, but everything would go down. I mean, it just is what it is. They don't have the content to support it like WWE does. But yeah, it's very interesting. Like, hell, we still don't know where Raw is going to be between October and January. So
and that's weird. Yeah, that's.
I have a feeling they're either going to sign a short-term deal with USA or they'll just put it on the network and sign a short-term deal with Peacock to get money that way. I was surprised to learn, this is my own stupidity, I had no idea that the Peacock content deal and the Peacock pay-per-view deal were different deals. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, and now because they're talking about when the pay-per-view deal is up, it's probably going to go to Netflix, but it doesn't mean the network will. And then found out WrestleMania, when Netflix carried WrestleMania in New Zealand, like, and that was kind of their big test. So yeah, this Netflix thing is huge for WWE. So I do like it. I know we just went to commercial. We're going to do another quick commercial break right now. We're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit of current wrestling, not too much, but Rob is definitely a good guy to talk to about this because it does coincide with some of his numbers. And then that'll be a show. So we'll be right back on the other side talking about the Women's World Championship.
This is your boy Kenny Killer telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
We are back as we wrap things up here on the Greg DeMarco Show. Greg DeMarco, Rob the Genius, sitting in for Patrick O'Dowd, dropping all sorts of knowledge and giving you all sorts of perspective on the numbers side of wrestling and what they actually mean and what's actually important. So we appreciate Rob stepping in and doing that. But Rob, big fan of women's wrestling, big follower of women's wrestling from both the numbers perspective and the creative perspective. Rhea Ripley having to vacate the WWE Women's World Championship this Monday on Raw due to injury reportedly sustained during the backstage brawl that they filmed with Liv Morgan. And they've already said next week they're going to crown a new women's champion on Raw. Haven't said how. I'm sure they're still figuring it out, but we'll probably know how before we get to Raw, because that's what they do. They leverage social media or even mainstream media in those cases. What do we think? I guess, how should they do it? And of course, who should it be? Are my big questions about this particular championship.
Okay, well, so now, assuming that well, it depends. Like, okay, are they just going to stick to the women who are on the Raw roster right now, or are they going to make it open to both rosters? Because that would change the dynamic.
Of course, it would.
If they're sticking to just women on Raw right now, then the obvious safe pick is just to call Becky to come back and give it to her. If not her, then, I mean, if you want somebody who could best play the role of champion and be kind of a domineering figure for a while, I would say Nia Jax.
Mm-hmm.
I know that some people are clamoring for Liv Morgan, but look, I know people will be really happy when she wins. Within the next week, she has to stand in front of Becky Lynch and Nia Jax and look like a substitute teacher as the women's champion. Okay. Now I can see a situation where when Rhea's ready to come back, that Liv wins the belt, and then they can do that. And then, but I don't think she's somebody that you keep putting the belt on for 4 months until Rhea or whenever Rhea comes back. So if they just stick to who's on Raw right now, Becky's the easy, safe, easy pick to do. If not her, I'd say Nia Jax.
I think there is.
Nobody else is credible right now.
It's really hard on Raw. You could bust out a Shayna Baszler. Shayna Baszler is the kind of person who in 2 weeks could be a top level. Most people in 2 weeks, WWE could make them a top level star. Like, I've postulated on this show, like, if they gave me the pen, like, I'd push Ricochet to the moon, because that guy is just insane and always gets these crazy reactions, and I feel like there's more they could do with him. I think Liv Morgan is a good choice because she is popular amongst a certain section of fans, especially the younger women. She's got a ton of heat behind her. Right? Some people are confused. They're like, is she the heel? Is she the face? Like, did you watch Raw? She came out and laughed at the injured beloved champion. Of course she's the heel. Like, don't be stupid. It's just because, yeah, Nia hurt her last year. That was last year. Like, wrestling's illogical. Stop trying to apply logic to a logical situation, as Bruce Pritchard would say. I think Liv is a great choice, but if you're going to put it on Liv, you got to go. Like she's got to beat Nia Jax in title defenses. She's got to beat Becky Lynch when she comes back. Like, you've got to use it to actually establish Liv Morgan and put her over in a way where she is credible, because it would be the moment, but Liv winning the title is a big case of whatever you do next is actually more important than her winning the title, because some of the audience would buy it right away and some wouldn't, but you do have the opportunity to then build it from there using the likes of some of the other talent that you have. I want to go to the how really quick, and then we'll even expand the horizons a little bit. You know this, and we've talked about this a little bit. The one, I guess, for me, drawback of the quote-unquote Triple H era, I don't think they focused on the women nearly enough. The match times are definitely down low, and even WrestleMania. Like, you had a lot of singles matches and mid-card matches that weren't for titles at WrestleMania. LA Knight versus AJ Styles, you know, the Final Testament versus Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits, the random tag match with Rey Mysterio and Dominik and their partners. Like, there were so many of these other matches that were kind of put together last minute, but we couldn't throw together a match for Liv Morgan and Nia Jax. Like, it just really struck me I think they had an opportunity. Yeah, they did the match between Damage Control and Bianca Belair, Jade Cargill, and Naomi. And that was really a showcase for Jade Cargill more than anything else. And it's the kind of type of match she needs to be in right now. And I think it's fine.
Yes.
But had we had a random night two match with Liv Morgan and Nia Jax, because they were starting to tell that story on Raw, to me, that would have shown an actual commitment to women's wrestling storylines that don't involve titles. And
that, and then also,
we're just not there.
Or they have enough women now. They could have done. They could have done the women's battle royal again.
Yeah, and you know, what's the harm in bringing back a kickoff match? Like, seriously, like what's? I don't see the harm in it. Most people are in the building by that point. You do it in the last 15 minutes before the show starts. Like, hell, I went to the Royal Rumble in 2019 here in Phoenix. There were like three matches on the kickoff that were spread out amongst a 2-hour kickoff show. Like, it was just crazy. What, Shinsuke Nakamura won the U.S. title in a kickoff match and then was number three in the Rumble that night. Like, it's just, granted, there's like a 4-hour gap between those two, how long that card was. But I think there was some opportunity to do that. So I do think next week on Raw, like, go all the way. Even though you don't have enough, like, main event level talent, if you're going to put it on Liv Morgan, Nia Jax, somebody who's currently there, not bringing Becky back, not doing any of that, go ahead and do an 8-woman tournament over the course of the night. I know we got King and Queen of the Ring coming up later, but do something that spans the course of the 3-hour program that ends with somebody winning the women's championship, and show that you think it matters. Because to me right now, they are teetering on the border of like, we're doing this because we have to and not because we want to, with some of the women's wrestling storylines and the time they're giving the women.
Well, look, last year, right? Like, Nia Jax coming back basically woke up the division.
Yeah.
Because for those first 4 or 5 months, Rhea didn't have any, because they were keeping her and Becky apart for obvious reasons. She didn't really have an opponent that anybody believed had a shot against her.
Right.
Until Nia Jax came back. And so, they put all the, they put most of the credible opponents on SmackDown because Charlotte was still over there. They sent Bianca over there. They sent Asuka over there. They sent Bayley over there. And so, yeah, it was just, I mean, Becky was waiting and, you know, they were obviously going to do Becky and Rhea at WrestleMania, and they didn't really have anybody else until Nia Jax came back. And like with Shayna, like they always do the thing with her. They build her up for 2 weeks and then she loses. And then they basically, they cut out whatever momentum she gained. They immediately cut out from under her. They're definitely, look, the match times are down on Raw. I mean, because last night they had 2 women's tag team matches, and they were combined less than 6 minutes.
Right.
So we're talking Divas era times here for that stuff. So basically, it's very skewed right now. When they have a big match to do, they give it time. Like when Becky did the last woman standing match with Nia, they gave that time. When they have something like that, they do give it time. But otherwise, like all this women's tag team stuff they're doing, they're just getting them in and out in 2 and 3 minutes at a time. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I'd say there's a lack of creative commitment. And over on SmackDown, until they did the thing after the Rumble where Bayley left Damage Control, for like that whole time last year, I call it booking like you're playing universe mode, where you just, you know, like, okay, well, this week Charlotte wrestles Bayley, next week Bianca wrestles Bayley, third week Charlotte and Bianca wrestle Bayley and Io, right? And then
it was AEW booking.
Right. I mean, there was kind of a vague story to it, but they didn't support the matches with promos or vignettes very much. It's just, you kind of, you know, and so there's been a lack of creative commitment. And then also there've been, you know, they don't have, at one time they had more people that they trusted to carry things available. So now, because like right now, okay, so Becky's taking a break for however long she's taking it, but Charlotte is injured. Sasha Banks is in AEW. Ronda Rousey is not there anymore. Alexa Bliss hasn't come back yet. Right now, so I'm running through names of people who they used to just hang stuff on to like to anchor things. And these people aren't there right now for various reasons. And so right now, I mean, they got Rhea, they got Bianca, And then, I mean, Asuka was somebody who would anchor things, but now she's doing tag teams, and I think she might be have some injury stuff going on. So they're down people who they could plug in to anchor stuff. You know, the Bellas aren't there anymore. Right. So they're down, and they would rely on those names to anchor stuff, which is why when Trish came back last year, that was a big deal because Trish was somebody they could, you know, rely on to anchor stuff. Right. Even though, you know, she can't obviously work 30-minute matches or whatever now, but they're down a lot of those women because the peak for the women's division as far as usage and time and all of that was like 2018 and 2019. And look who you had. You had the Horsemen right. for Asuka. You had Alexa Bliss. You had Ronda. You had the Bellas came back for a while. You had Trish came back for a while. You know, they don't have all those people now. And so they kind of just – there aren't as many people that they trust to anchor stuff. So they're not doing as much. Creatively, they're not putting a whole lot of detail into the stuff that they're booking. Like they got lucky because, you know, Nia Jax and Becky had existing history to, mm-hmm. to work with. And they've gotten lucky here with Liv and Rhea because they got, you know, real life injuries that happened they can play off of. But when they actually have to build something creatively, they're not really doing it.
No. They're really not. You know, it's interesting. You pointed out all this prior history and back history they can use. If you really think about the Triple H era so far, and it's only really been, you know, a year and a half or whatever, they have not really started anything from scratch. Like, everything that they have done has been already built things, already built rivalries, and they've paid a lot of things off. I think this next year is really, even like they didn't build Sami Zayn up. They just kind of shifted him from Bloodline Sami into singles Gunther Sami. Like, Jey Uso was already doing the Bloodline thing and had the SummerSlam main event last year and now had, you know, solo run on Raw. Like, Cody came in as a near top guy. Like, they have not truly built somebody up from quote unquote the bottom or whatever. Now, I think with this draft and Bron Breakker shifting over to permanently on the main roster and of course Tiffany Stratton, like, some of it is just what you have to do when you take over immediately. Like, you can't just rebuild right away. But this next year is going to be very telling, as hopefully they will build some people up from quote unquote nothing to a different point. But it is very interesting. And this tournament could be a way to do that. What if they did a one night tournament on Raw and Zoe Stark won and got some big wins along the way? Like, you could use that as a launching point for somebody like Zoe Stark.
Absolutely.
You just got to do it.
Yeah. And like I said, with Shayna, it's always the same thing with Shayna, right? They heat her up for a few weeks. And then they heat her up for one match, basically, and she loses the one match they've been heating her up for. And then she goes right back to, you know, being 50-50 again.
Right.
So it's because we've talked about this on the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. There's also kind of an elephant in the room that the general audience is not as demanding of this stuff as we are.
Right.
If you give them a good title feud and maybe one more thing, as far as women's wrestling, the general audience will be basically satisfied. I mean, because as you know, as lackluster as the creative stuff has been for the women's wrestling over the past couple of years, business is at an all-time high, so they're not paying a penalty for it.
No, you're right.
I mean, that's a reality. They're not paying a penalty for it. So, and that's. It wouldn't surprise me if that's how they're looking at it. And because, you know, because, you know, I mean, people complain about these, you know, some of those 30-minute Bloodline segments. Well,
yeah,
the building was sold out more than ever, you know, with those 30-minute Bloodline segments. And also, like, if you look at, you know, I look at like the YouTube views for stuff this year so far, like the top out of the top 10. Stuff for men on YouTube views, like 9 of them are promo segments. Now, some of them are promo segments that turned into fights.
Right.
But they're still promo segments. And the women's side, it's more of a mix. But also, like right now, I'm looking at it right now, out of the TV, just the TV highlight stuff, there's not one women's TV segment that got over 1 million views yet this year.
But look what they've served up. I mean, you know, they've served up some stuff, but yeah, it's not.
Yeah, and it's just on the men's side, you got 2 million. You got some. You got a bunch with 2 million. You got one with 3, 1 with 4, 1 with 5. You got when The Rock came back on New Year's Day, that has like over 7 million views.
Yeah, it's The Rock. There's so yeah, I get huge, that.
There is a huge gap right now between just the what the women what people are basically viewing between the two divisions, mm-hmm. and it's been like that for a couple of years.
Yeah, I believe it.
It's been like that because. And this is where I will defend Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey brought a shit ton of views for stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Even in the final days where she wasn't doing as much as she used to, she was still getting more views than most of the women's stuff. And she got people on the shows that wouldn't have been there. You know. So look, Ronda says a lot of crazy stuff. But I will defend her as a presence on the roster because she brought views and she got people in spots that they would not have been in otherwise.
Absolutely. And I honestly, it's like funny because she complains right now about the treatment Logan Paul had. But when she was there, she said she wanted to be a full timer. Like she said she didn't want that special treatment. She wanted to work out like she's really, and some of it's just trying to stay relevant. It's really hard for people to leave the public eye sometimes. And so I just don't pay a lot of mind to the things that Ronda Rousey's saying. But there's also the section of the WWE audience who will take whatever WWE gives them. And I think if they could leverage that section of the audience a little bit more with the women's division and build it up. I saw somebody that said they should have just let Rhea take time off and use this time to put, you know, put together a women's mid-card championship, which they're now doing in NXT. So I wanted a women's intercontinental title when they brought out the women's tag titles. Like I've been wanting that for a long time.
Oh man. So I go back and forth. Well, all right. Yeah. They have 40 women on the main roster right now. If you count people who are out like Charlotte and Alexa
right.
and Shotzi, they got 40. That's the most they've ever had. So just from a sheer volume standpoint, they absolutely could use a mid-card title.
But you got to do something with it. That's the thing.
Right. Because with the tag team titles get booked according to who has them.
Mm-hmm. But you can tell they've put a focus on rebuilding the tag team divisions and look where they are now. They've got two different, you know, they've got established tag team divisions on each show. So they could, it's taken time. It's going back to last fall and even when they started doing that. But they've got established tag teams. They've got established tag team wrestlers. They got established, which is funny when both the tag team champions are quote unquote makeshift teams, but one has, you know, over a decade of history and the other one is just a tag team that got thrown together that has phenomenal chemistry. So, and they're heels, which means you can build up all the baby faces, especially after the draft, because I think some teams will move in the draft. But I think there's a lot that can be said and can be done there. And of course, NXT, you know, NXT actually probably has not as good of a tag team division, but the women's division is insane and what they're able to do there. And they got their title coming up. And you know what? Come the 2026 WWE draft, when they pull Lola Vice to Raw or SmackDown, she's going to be huge. So once she finally figures this business out, which she's on her way, but when she has that moment where things truly do click and she has more experience under her belt, she's going to be, she was huge in MMA despite never getting to UFC. So she's going to be huge in WWE too. Just watch. So
yeah, it's just, and like I say, NXT is the gold standard for booking women's wrestling.
It truly is.
I mean, cause they have several matches every week. They have three or four matches sometimes in 2 hours and they got all these storylines running. You know, they got like three and four different storylines running at the same time.
Oh yeah.
They give everybody something to do, even if they're not in the storyline right now. And they do it in 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Not, you know. And I think, but part of that though is that you don't have as big of a gap between the men's and the women's side,
right?
In NXT, because at the end of the day, the main roster is still sausage fest. And if you have several big time men's things going on, that's going to squeeze out all the time. And right now
it is,
you got Cody, you got Bloodline, you got Punk, you got Drew, you got Jay, you got Sammy, you got LA Knight, you know, I mean, and you got Kevin Owens, right, and Logan Paul,
Randy Orton, Judgment Day, like you got it all.
Yeah. And so they're going to default to that because when the women's division was at its peak, the men's division was kind of a bit of a shambles.
Yeah.
And that's just, I mean, that's one of those unfortunate things. You know, it's, we're talking about decades of sexism and simply being oriented to favor the men's side of things, both, you know, on the, you know, on the corporate side and on the fan side. And so you're going up against that. So the default is always going to be, the default is going to be to build up the men's side and promote the men's side. And if the men's side is doing great, then the women's side kind of gets what it gets. You right. know, that's the default. I mean, with just how this, it works.
Absolutely. I remember sometime last year when there was a random episode of NXT that was only women's matches. They didn't advertise it that way. They never made a big deal out of it. They just did it. And that's, and again, it goes back to the WNBA conversation. Wrestling's still a lot further along than many industries and many sports with what's done with women than what you see globally and in other sports and other realms. So I do get that. Let's wrap things up.
All right, gentlemen, yeah. You have 3 minutes, and you better make it good.
We got 3 minutes, and we're out of here. The clock is ticking, and we're in the clear. We got 3 minutes, and we're out of here. We got 3 minutes, and we're out.
So I'm going to totally put Rob on the spot, as none of this show was really planned anyway. And that's usually when Patrick and I, about 6 months ago, when Miranda had to leave because, you know, she's pregnant with a kid, we just stopped planning out the shows and just start talking about what's important to us. And it got better and it got really good. And so that's why we stick with that. We talk about a lot of things today, a lot of numbers, a lot of everything. Of course, you talk weekly on the Mindless Wrestling Podcast here on the Chair Shot Radio Network, which is always a great listen. I mean, I was the person who brought it into the network, so obviously I think it's a great listen. What is a topic or the most important topic or what's out there that you think people should care about, but for some reason they're not talking about it? Like just something out there that's important that isn't being given a level of importance that it should, whether it's wrestling, whether it's tangential to wrestling, whatever it could possibly be, but something that you think is a big deal or important that nobody else seems to. They might, they just seem to. Please.
Okay. Good question.
If you can't think of one, I'm sure I can come up with one.
Oh, I got you. Okay, because we've talked about this on the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. Just some the roster size and the TV. Because everybody wants their favorite mid carder to go up to the main event.
Everybody so true.
Everybody wants their favorite NXT people to get called up yesterday. And everybody wants their favorite wrestler who's not in WWE to come to WWE.
It's true.
And we always say this, like, I mean, I know they got a lot of money. They can pay all these people. But there comes a point where, you know, they're not going to keep all these people.
Right. Oh, I agree. And that we're coming to that time of year, too. And hopefully it's not what it has been in the past. And they're cutting costs. Look at the Raw stage and SmackDown stage right now. Like, that's not done because of crowd sizes, because it doesn't change the amount of seats you can put in the building versus stage. But it's like two less trucks they have to bring out now. Like, they are cutting costs. And with the efficiencies, I firmly believe NXT is going to move to Vegas. I really do. When that TKO deal was announced, I was like, NXT will go to Vegas because UFC has their performance center there. There's talk that Battleground is going to take place in Vegas now, and they stopped selling the tickets in Savannah, Georgia. To me, I think that's a test run, and I think that you'll start seeing NXT eventually emanate from the UFC Apex facility in Vegas. And I don't know. It's just a gut feeling I've had since the TKO deal. I could see them moving and leveraging those common, you know, common needs and common facilities and move the whole Performance Center NXT operation to Vegas. Just a gut instinct thing. I just feel like that's going to happen later this year. Who the hell knows, though? It's a lot of people that have to move, but you just never know. Maybe I selfishly want to do that because it's 4 hours away, but you just never know. It's going to be crazy, but you're right. Like the roster is so big and so talented. And people will groan at this idea because who the hell wants to devote another 2 hours? They could put on another show. They really could. They could have created a third quote unquote main roster program.
Oh, absolutely.
And a third world title, third tag titles, and they have the talent to populate it.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
even if it was just on the network.
Show, right.
See, I hate that idea. Only, I mean, right now, I think the product kind of might lend itself to support that idea, but I think it also marginalizes the women.
Right.
And I mean, when AEW did their women's tag team tournament years ago, it wasn't even good enough to be on Dark. It was only on, it was its own separate YouTube thing. Like that's how unimportant it was. And they never even promoted it on TV. Like it's giving the women their Evolution was a great pay-per-view and I'm glad they did it and all of that. But like, you just can't give the women their own show just so that they could be seen, you know, more focused, more storylines, whatever. You've got 3 hours of Raw and 2 hours of SmackDown.
Yeah.
NXT is proving you can do it. And here's the thing. Dude, Shawn Michaels is eventually going to be doing stuff for the main roster. Like, it's just what happens. He's already now overseeing talent relations. I know that's probably temporary, but Shawn will eventually get the call up and start working on Raw and SmackDown. I firmly believe both CM Punk and Cody Rhodes are going to get turns in the Shawn Michaels role in the future. Oh, yeah. I firmly believe that Cody Rhodes will eventually be the CCO that Triple H is right now. I think they're grooming for that.
One day, there'll come a day where Cody's running the main roster and Punk is running NXT.
Yeah, and I think that's what they both want. But I think Cody has to get the run in NXT first, because as great as Cody is, there's tons that he doesn't know. And I think he's smart enough to know that. So
yeah.
So there you go.
I'm against the women's show because we've talked about it, and I can name you two people who would absolutely refuse to go on the women's show. And that's Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair.
As they should. Because why?
Yeah, they would say hell no. Because
they've broken through more than anybody, really. And it shows. Of course, you know, I've said it before. Like, Charlotte and Asuka should have main evented WrestleMania 34, not Charlotte, Becky, and Ronda at 35. So, and they should have done it without the fanfare of all the prior announcements. Just... there were years where you would go into WrestleMania not knowing which match was going to go on last. You had it down to like two or three, but you had no idea. You could have done that very easily with WrestleMania 34, and that would have been, you know, this history-making thing, but they just chase history in a different way than my playlist is all it ends up being in the end. So, Rob,
the whole thing with Ronda, everything was centered around Ronda, you know. But anyway, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. And if not for Ronda, women may not have main evented WrestleMania 35. As wrong as that is, it just may have gone down. And look, that match wasn't even that good. Like, let's be honest. And Ronda didn't even want to tap out, so she had to get pinned. But is what it is. Rob, I appreciate you stepping in this week for Patrick O'Dowd. I definitely want everybody to seek out Rob the Genius. He writes great stuff. He puts out great content. Of course, you can hear him every week on the Mindless Wrestling Podcast here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Offers a perspective that no one else has because of his dedication to the numbers, and that's something that I appreciate and want to be able to do more of in the future. So, Rob, we appreciate you doing that. Everybody else listening, go follow along at Chairshot Media on social media. Listen to all of the podcasts, read all the content that we have at thechairshot.com. That's your home. That's our home. It's something that's very important to us, so we appreciate all of your continued support.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
For Rob, for myself, we appreciate you listening. Until next week, just remember, always use your head.
A little less conversation, a little more action, please. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me. A little more.
TheChairShot.com.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Acknowledge me.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.